Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Sunday, December the 9th. And as we like to do on Sundays, we'll be chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. It's been an amazing weekend. The last 72 hours or so are remarkable, all the news stories. It's just one breaking news after another. And you begin to wonder, is it really breaking, or do they need to tell us that these stories? I mean, I don't know. I get confused. So much is being thrown at us, and we're going to try to digest a little bit of that with our friend Bill Katz tonight. There's Democrats who are now actually saying that Trump should go to jail. I mean, this is that fellow from California, Adam Schiff, who I think is extremely, extremely irresponsible. They're talking about impeachment, which is, again, they should listen to Mark Penn. We'll talk a little bit about that tonight. Paris is really burning, this time for sure. The city is burning. I'm not sure if President Macron is going to survive this. He's supposed to speak to the nation on Monday. We'll hear what he has to say, but he's in deep, deep trouble in that country. Chuck Todd of NBC News has now said, has an explanation now for 2016. He says that, I guess we're gullible, those of us who voted for President Trump. That's an interesting way of describing it. The DNC chairman has some rather remarkable things to say about people of faith. And there's a professor up in Minnesota who has a very interesting explanation of what happened to the Virgin Mary and the birth of Christ. So a lot to get into tonight with our friend Bill Katz. How are you, Bill?
Oh, reasonably well, reasonably well. We are going into the holiday, the real holiday season now,
right,
where the Christmas shopping is becoming a very big thing. It is December 9th, I see all the smiles on the faces of people who expect. And but I have to tell you, there is a noticeable drop in traffic at the brick and mortar stores. I don't think there's any question about that. I think there's so much online buying going on that it is noticeable, and I don't know if it'll affect overall sales, because you know those sales online go into the mix. But this is a very important quarter for the American economy, and you kind of look around and you see what's going and what isn't going. I happen to love this season. I love the holiday season. I wish that more people would celebrate it, and I wish that more people would show respect. But maybe that's something from the past generation.
Yes, no, I agree with you. I love the season, too. I do think, my own personal opinion, I do think they start playing Christmas music a little too early. You know, we have stations here in Dallas playing Christmas music the Friday after Thanksgiving, which is, I think, a bit too much. But I think now maybe by the 10th or the 15th of the month, that's when I usually get into the spirit more and more. But, you know, at least the weather is making it a white Christmas, Bill.
It may be. I mean, we'll see around December 25th. I was very struck by the fact that this was such a cold month. But Al Gore says that's kind of to be expected among these things.
Yeah.
You know, and if it was a very warm month, well, that was kind of to be expected.
He told us about it in his book, Bill. He told us about all these contingencies.
Yes, he did. I see that the new progressives, as they call themselves, who are marching into Congress, are going to make climate change their big issue. And I think we ought to send to each of them, each of the progressives who got elected, a $7 Staples calculator so they can calculate what this is going to cost and what it will cost the average American family. And we might also show them pictures of a barren foreign island, which is where they're going to be sent by the voters once the voters find out what their new electric bills will be.
That's right. That's right. Well, they wouldn't be a bad idea to show them a few videos from Paris also, but we'll talk about that in just a minute. But I wanted to go back just briefly, Bill, to the President Bush funeral that culminated here at Texas A&M, where a couple of my sons graduated from university. It was a beautiful ceremony from beginning to end. And, you know, and I kept watching this, and I kind of came to the conclusion, Bill, that what we saw, this tremendous showing of love and affection for this man, George Bush, I think what we saw was not so much love toward him. There was a lot of that, but I think it was a way of many people saying thank you to the generation that fought and is now passing on from World War II. I think it was their way of saying thank you to that generation. We here in Dallas, you know, we from time to time read an obituary about a veteran who passed away from that generation. But this is the one, I think the nation did it all at once, and I was very happy about that, Bill.
I was too. Now, you know, it's been pointed out that the among the journalistic class that the hypocrisy was flowing, because when he was alive, he didn't get anywhere near this kind of respect from them. But I think the country as a whole did exactly as you say. I think that there it was a sense that he was the last of the World War II generation presidents. There won't be any more. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh.
Hello, Bill?
Well,
no, I was listening to
wrong.
You.
Okay.
No.
He is the last of the World War II generation presidents, and there aren't going to be any more. The one who followed him, of course, was Bill Clinton, who had expressed actually early in his life contempt for the military. So maybe he set the bad tone that we see around us today. But Bush had, was a young naval aviator. I think he was the second youngest naval aviator in the Pacific in World War II. Came from a prominent family, and I always think about those prominent families, because had they wanted to, had Bush wanted to, had young John Kennedy wanted to, they probably could have gotten out of it. You know, they some influence, some strings, a desk job in Washington, but they didn't. They didn't make any attempt to get out of it. Despite all the disparaging of George W. Bush, the 43rd president, and the attempts to smear him as a draft dodger, the fact is that he was in the Air National Guard and volunteered to be a fighter pilot, which is one of the most dangerous things you can do in the American military. And people forget that. But George H.W. Bush, I was not, you know, politically, that enthusiastic about his administration, but he always carried himself with great dignity and decency, and he did reflect a generation to whom this country meant a great deal, and a much less cynical generation than what we see today. And I do think there was a sense of, you know, just as when Jack Kennedy was elected, he said the torch is being passed to a new generation born in this century, and that was true. And I think that the passing of the torch from George W. Bush to the new generation was symbolic, and I think his funeral was symbolic.
Yeah, I think so. I think a lot of people were saying goodbye to him. And wasn't that scene from Bob Dole, Senator Bob Dole, amazing?
It was.
Where he stood up like that. I just think, I mean, of course, he's probably the other one well-known veteran from World War II, aside from President Bush. But you're right. I mean, this is it for World War II. I mean, I think from now on it'll become more of a historical detail.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it was the 77th anniversary this year of Pearl Harbor.
Fairly noticed.
And next year it'll be the 75th or 74th anniversary of the end of the war. So these things, you know, at some point they become more historical facts than emotional things. But I was happy to see President Bush get a great farewell. I thought it was absolutely great. Well, we sure have a lot of current events to get into, Bill. I'm not sure where to start, but I guess maybe on Friday afternoon, when Mr. Mueller came out with those two reports about Mr. Cohen and Mr. Manafort. Look, I've heard both sides of this, and I don't hear anybody say that this was fatal for President Trump, but if you listen to some people, it is, Bill.
Well, there are plenty of people who want to make it fatal, and you kind of wonder why. Because to the opposition, if Trump is removed, or if Trump is forced to resign, which is the case with Nixon, who becomes president? But Pence, Mike Pence. Mike Pence is no picnic for the Democrats. I mean, he's very conservative, very well liked, very much respected by the Republican Party. Does not have some of the flash of Donald Trump, that's sure, but he also doesn't have some of the defects of Donald Trump. And I don't know where the Democrats really are going. I think, though, that they're not going to be given very much time by the American people to shape up and start doing things for the country, not just for themselves and for their base, because I think there was an article, you saw it, by Mark Penn, the Democratic pollster and consultant, who had worked very closely with the Clintons and has become sort of a renegade Democrat, and he warned the Democratic Party to be awfully careful of impeachment and to look at the past. Americans don't like it. They really don't. You better have the goods, and those goods better be important. And I'm not so sure that they have anywhere near the goods, and I think that the American people may not regard whatever the case Mueller comes up with as important enough to warrant removal of a president. But the one of the elements here that is not really being discussed enough is the role of the press in all this. They're loving this.
Mm-hmm.
They're absolutely loving this. It sells papers. It sells ad time. They hate Trump with a venom that is very rarely seen in politics. And I think that they would be delighted if he were impeached. But then you can be sure that people who are perhaps, you know, more historically oriented, more learned, will come back and say, hey, wait a minute. They impeached Clinton, and he wound up with a 70% approval rating. And even though he had lied to a grand jury, which is a pretty serious offense, the American people did not want him removed from office. And that's something you may see again. If they all start ganging up on Trump, Trump will get, in a way, a kind of sympathy.
Right. Well, interestingly enough, too, I think the problem is that Mr. Mueller's biggest enemy is how long he's been doing this.
Oh, yes.
I mean, I was in favor of the investigation, but what I was interested in more than anything else was the role of Russia in our elections. I never thought that Russia had twisted the election or put the election on one side or the other, or that they had switched any votes or anything like that. I never looked at this investigation. Neither did I think that the Trump campaign was colluding with the Russians. I was interested in knowing what the Russians were doing because I think that kind of information could be helpful for the United States, but it could also be helpful, Bill, in other allies. A country like Brazil, for example, a country like Argentina, like Mexico, like Colombia. In those countries, without the technology that we have, that kind of information could have been very good for letting these countries know, look, the Russians may get in here, the communists may get in here and try to mess up your election. So be ready for
yes.
it. That's how I was looking at it. I never thought that they had anything to do with the election of President Trump. I just, I think that the person who lost the election was Hillary Clinton, Bill.
Yes, it is very, very hard to follow the notion that the Russians influenced our election to the extent that they influenced even one vote. I mean, where is that vote? Show it to me. They probably did try to tamper. I think they've been doing it for decades. I mean, it is back to the old Soviet Union. But the argument seems to me awfully weak, and the argument about his lawyer being, recommended for a jail sentence, well, it's his lawyer. I mean, they're now zeroing in, I see, on the notion as to whether or not Trump ordered Cohn to pay hush money to two women. Well, the subject itself is ugly. No one is denying that. I mean, if he paid hush money to two women, it may not be illegal, but it's certainly not a great recommendation for the president. But on the other hand, I think the question may come up immediately, well, Mr. Cohn, were you the president's lawyer? And he has to say yes, because he was, and he's a member of the bar. And they'll say, well, Mr. Cohn, why didn't you advise the president that this was illegal? Isn't that the purpose of having a lawyer? And I think they may get caught on that Cohn himself may have violated the law, but that Trump did not violate the law.
Mm-hmm. Well, it just seems to me like such a convenient story. If you want to get Trump, it's such a convenient story to try to get him this way. Somebody was saying the other day that he's not, and you may know this being from New Yorkville, that Michael Cohen is not really Donald Trump's personal lawyer, because what they're saying is a guy like Donald Trump had law firms and not just accounting
right.
firms to do his work. It's not like, it's not like a small businessman who has one lawyer on retainer to work on his business. I mean, Trump, with a business like what he had, probably had hundreds of lawyers and accountants working on his behalf. So it's hard for me to believe that Michael Cohen would be his only source of legal opinion. I just find that hard to believe, Bill.
I do too, and I also find it hard to believe that Trump would rely on Cohen exclusively in any matter. Cohen strikes me as more less of a lawyer and more of a fixer. I think he went to some obscure law school, which may not even be on this planet. I mean, Freddie's Law School and Grill or something. And I assume he was a member of the bar in New York, although you can't be sure of anything these days. But I don't know if his testimony is going to really turn things as much as the special counsel believes it's going to turn things. First of all, he's a disreputable character. It doesn't reflect well on the president, but he is a disreputable character. And also, the president can say, look, I didn't know this was illegal. It's embarrassing. I didn't want to do it, but I didn't know it was against law. If I did, I wouldn't have done it. It's going to be awfully hard. You know, the impeachment can be done, as you know, by the House of Representatives by majority vote. And it has been done twice in our history, once to Andrew Johnson and once to Bill Clinton. But beyond that, you have to be tried in the Senate, and it would take a two-thirds vote to remove a president. Now, it seems to me that Trump's greatest danger here is not the simple act of impeachment, but the question of how many Republicans would stay loyal to him. This was a problem at Watergate. Many Republicans didn't like Nixon. And they were prepared to vote against him if their own careers were involved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had to do, you know, in effect, what the public indicated. But I don't know if that's the case today.
Well, I don't think so either, because I think in the case of Richard Nixon, you know, there was some, he had tried obstruction of justice. I mean, there was a case against Richard Nixon. And in the case of Bill Clinton, there was perjury and there was lying to a grand jury and obstruction of justice. It just seems to me that there was a case before that you could make a case for impeachment. I guess that's what I'm saying. But in this particular case, I mean, we don't have a crime yet. Nobody has come out to me and said this is a crime that he committed. So I don't know how in the world you start an impeachment process if you don't have a crime identified. My gut feeling, and again, I could be dead wrong, but my gut feeling tells me that there is going to be a huge clash between the crazy base of the party represented by people like Adam Schiff, who just want to get Trump at any cost, and a bunch of these newly elected Democrats who came from districts where they won by 1%, 1.5%, who are already facing a very tough reelection in 2020. When Trump is going to be on the ticket. And I wonder how many of these new Democrats are going to say, we didn't come here to do this. So don't get me into this. We didn't come here to impeach this guy. We came here for this or that. So I think that there's going to be a battle within the party, Bill. I just feel that way. I just don't think they have the goods on. They don't have enough to even write an article of impeachment. That's my sense right now. And if they try writing an article of impeachment on campaign finance, when the whole issue of Obama is going to come out, he had $2 million.
Oh, absolutely.
And so I mean, then people will say, well, gee, you know, why didn't Obama go through the same thing? One more thing, Bill, that I want to say about all of this that Democrats are getting into. You now have a judge who is looking into Hillary Clinton's emails. You have investigations of Hillary Clinton emails, the Clinton Foundation. I wonder if at some point in time here there's going to be actually a truce, you know, a ceasefire between the two sides, realizing that they have so much to lose to go forward. Because if they try to bring down Trump, Trump is not going down by himself. I mean, the guy's a fighter, and he'll bring down somebody else. So I don't know. Maybe I'm talking too much. But I don't think this impeachment thing is going to be as easy for the Democrats as they think it is, Bill.
I think you're right. I think the ones who think it's easy are the radicals who think everything is easy. That's why they're radical. I mean, just do it. Like, what does little Evita say about paying for Obama or the Medicare for everyone? Just pay for it. That was her answer.
Right.
Can you just imagine a kid growing up in an ordinary American household and wants a car for his 16th birthday, and the father is just gone unemployed, and the kid says, just pay for it. I mean,
right.
That's the level. The level is just unbelievably low. And I think you're right that impeachment will be very, very difficult, and it could backfire, and the base of the party can get angry, and who knows what would happen after that.
Well, what I think is going to happen is the clash between the two sides. I mean, many of these very rich liberals who financed a bunch of campaigns, including Ted Cruz, I mean, Beto O'Rourke, and lots of others, they want Trump impeached. They paid for it. They're going to say, hey,
I
donated money to your campaign. And then these Democrats are going to say, yeah, I know you did, but you know that's not really what I ran on. So I don't know. We'll see in about 6 months, but I think the Democrats have to be very careful, like Mark Penn was saying, Bill.
I think that's absolutely correct, because they're not looking at public opinion. They're looking at party opinion, and that's a very
mm-hmm.
dangerous thing. And this is all going to take place as we enter the 2020 presidential race. It's going to, as they say, look funny. And also, they only have about a year to build some kind of a record in the House of Representatives that they can take to the American people to continue their majority. And I'm not seeing where that record is coming from.
No, and you're right about all these promises and this young woman in New York. I mean, these people are going to have to write a budget here pretty soon, Bill. They're going to have to write a budget, and they're going to have to explain, you know, this young woman who's been making some outrageous remarks like, you know, why don't we just do away with the military, I guess, to pay for Medicare? I mean, this young woman has just been crazy in the stuff she was saying. No, I mean,
there was
a time when somebody like that would be, they would tell her, you know, we're not going to invite you to the press, to the show anymore because you don't know what you're talking about. Why don't you learn something and then we'll invite you? But she's like the darling of the media, Bill.
Networks, I should say. She's attractive, and that's all they care about. And there's this other one from Michigan, the Queen of Palestine. Who comes in? Oh yes, yes, yes! I'm going to take a whole group to my home. I want them to meet my grandmother. I mean, these guys are probably rolling their eyes and saying, "Oh God, well, she wants us to meet her grandmother." I mean, what kind of a trip is that?
Right.
And I think a lot of them are going to wear out their welcome, except in the
And of course, some of their districts are pretty easy for them, as is the case of this young woman in the Bronx. But
yes,
she may not be very welcomed by some of the other members. But I just think that at some point, all this impeachment talk is also going to force their presidential candidates to go crazy left on impeachment as well. And how electable is that going to make you when you're spending all the debates in the summer of 2019 and the fall of 2019 talking about impeachment? How electable is that going to make you, Bill?
That's right. That's right. Well, you know, it's the old story. You can't predict the future because you don't know what other event might come up
mm-hmm.
during this time period that creates an entirely different environment in which this investigation will be run. You mentioned before Hillary Clinton. There is, an investigation going on, I believe, by federal authorities in Utah.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't recall the circumstances under which Utah was given this. But you could, out of the blue can come old news about Hillary Clinton that
mm-hmm.
can be very devastating. I don't know if it'll happen. And if it doesn't happen, then the conservative press, and there is a conservative press, and it is
mm-hmm.
somewhat
sure.
influential, will start asking questions.
Well, and Trump will ask questions. I mean, the one thing
about
we've learned about Trump is that he doesn't mind talking about any of this. And he'll talk a lot more about it the more. But look, I've said this to people before. I think I've said it on the show. If Mueller has evidence of a crime committed by President Trump, tell me about it, and I'll listen to it. If it's something really bad, look, you know, as I say, he has to go. Probably resign, not impeach. Probably resign, and then we'll put Pence in. And look, I'll be very happy with Pence. I mean, I have no complaints. If we had a President Pence going into 2020, I wouldn't be upset about that at all.
He would immediately choose Nikki Haley as vice president.
Yeah, somebody like
that's a powerful ticket.
Absolutely, or maybe somebody very conservative, or whatever it is. But he would be tough to beat. And I think I told this Democrat lady the other day. I was on Telemundo, And I said to this Democrat lady, joking, I said, I wonder if you think that if you impeach President Trump that you're going to get Hillary Clinton as president. And she looked at me a little crazy, but I bet a lot of them believe that, Bill.
Yes. I think they do also. They think it's going to change parties. The only way it would change parties is if they knocked off both of them at the same time, both Trump and Pence, and then Nancy Pelosi would become president because she's Speaker of the House. But
right.
That's not going to happen. There are no charges against Pence. They
right.
can't just add
no.
them for the fun of it. They can't just say, let's have some fun with this. I think, the media would love it. The media has become just basically the infotainment business. It really is.
Mm-hmm. Right. No, I think you're right about that. And But I think what you said before is very true, Bill. I think there's a very short honeymoon here for this new Congress. They need to get something done. They need to show very quickly that they're getting something done. If all they're doing is talking about impeaching Trump, I just don't think they're going to be very popular. We're going to take a little break, Bill. We'll be back. We'll talk about Paris, and we'll talk about a few other things going on in the news.
Carlos Guedes Harpies. I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Tzatziki's at the Star, located at 6765 Winning Drive in Frisco. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy music at 6:30 until 9:30 p.m. Make your reservation today at 972-377-2276. Remember, Tzatziki's at the Star is the place to hang out on Saturday night. For upcoming dates, look for me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
And we have a link to Carlos on the show information. Click on that, and it'll take you to his schedule. He's all over town playing at lots of different places. We also have a link to my friend Duke Machado, who's a car dealer here in Texas. So if you're looking for a car, click on that and give my friend Duke a call. Let's get back to our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, I just wanted to very quickly mention that this, over the last 24 hours, was the 38th anniversary of the assassination of John Lennon. And, in fact, most of the country learned about it the morning after, December 9th. He was killed, but it was so late that it went into the early morning, Bill.
He was our next-door neighbor.
Yes,
we
that's what
in,
I...
We lived in the next building.
That's why
and
I
that's
mentioned
exactly,
it.
Yes, that's exactly what happened. I got up the next morning, and we heard the thump outside our door because we lived in the department building, and they delivered the paper every morning. And I picked it up, mm-hmm. and there it was on the front page. I knew nothing about it, but I think I mentioned once on the show that when mm-hmm. they showed the picture of Chapman, I remembered seeing him in front of the building the day before. And they showed where the killing took place, which was the little entranceway. The Dakota is a very famous New York building. That's the building where he lived. It was one of the oldest New York apartment buildings, built back in, I believe, 1882. A lot of celebrities lived there. Leonard Bernstein, Lauren Bacall lived there, Robert Ryan, some others. And it was an enormous story. I mean, our block was blocked off literally for a week. The crowds were so great. And, people...
Yeah.
coming to nearby Central Park and playing his music?
Yeah. I think one of the most interesting things, I happened to be in Mexico City when it happened, so I didn't hear about it until the next morning like you did. But one of the most interesting things to me is that the Americans who did hear the story on that Monday night were actually watching the Monday night football game on ABC, and that doesn't exist anymore. There is no Monday night game on ABC. It's now on cable. And Howard Cosell was actually the one who broke the news or broke the story. So all of these little tidbits about, a very tragic night, to say the least. But it was very late. It was very late, as I understand
yes.
it. But he was, by the time they took him to, I believe, Roosevelt Hospital, if that's the
yes.
name of, he was pretty much, I think he was dead on arrival, as Howard Cosell said. But I think by the time they pronounced him dead, it was early into the next day, December the 9th, which is why in many of his little biographies on the Internet, it's December the 9th, 1980, when listed as the day he died, because of the fact that he was declared dead in the early hours of the next morning, Bill.
That's true. And it was a a convulsing event. I mean, of course, all the little stores in the newspaper, mm-hmm. in the neighborhood, put up pictures of him. Many of them probably didn't even know who he was, and some of them mm-hmm. probably didn't know he even lived in the neighborhood. But I never saw him in the neighborhood. My daughter, my younger daughter, was a friend of his son, though. And they knew
Sean,
each other.
I think, is his son.
Sean.
Right? Sean?
Yes.
Yeah,
and if you listen to John Lennon's last record called Double Fantasy, mm-hmm. there is a band, the last band is a recording of Sean's birthday party, and you hear somebody yelling, Abigail, and that's my daughter.
Oh, wow, what a cool thing. I'm going to have to listen. I remember, actually, I have listened to that because I remember you saying that a couple of years ago when we talked about this topic. Yes, you're right. That is right there. That was a good album, by the way. That was a good album that he made, a lot better than some of the other stuff he had made in the 70s. He kind of got lost in the 70s. He kind of walked away from music for a while.
He did.
But he came back with this album that was actually one of his better ones. But anyway, John Lennon, 38 years ago. You know, I was thinking too, Bill, that with the death of John Lennon or the shooting of John Lennon, then after, within 6 months, you had the shooting of John Paul II and President Reagan. Now, those two, of course, survived. But it
yes.
just seemed like for a while there, it was just like one after another, Bill.
It was, yes, and when that in turn reminded us of 1968, when we had
mm-hmm.
Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King assassinated within a few months of each other. And absolutely
that's right. That's
jolting
right.
to the country. Absolutely
yes.
jolting.
That's right. Of course, those two were killed. Thankfully, President Reagan and John Paul II were not, because they became two of the leading personalities of the 1980s. Bill, let's
That's
talk
right.
a little bit about Paris. Paris is, it's really burning. I mean, but what's interesting, though, is we're getting a lot of news about Paris, but I have through different sources and so on that it's actually in the whole country. This is not just happening in Paris. This is happening in the whole country. There's a lot of fighting going on. They have something like 8,900 security officers on the streets. That's a lot of security officers, Bill. It's incredible what's happening.
It is, and while it won't shut down the country, Macron, the president, I think has an 18% approval rating, which I of course Trump, being Trump, has been gloating about that, because a few weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
if you remember, Macron was criticizing Trump and some of Trump's attitudes, and I think Trump is having the best time of his life, giving it right back to Macron. this is, you know, it is symbolic of something that happened here, the 2016 election, and that is a government that loses touch with its people and political parties that lose touch with their people. Macron has really lost touch with the a spirit of the French people. They feel that they have been left out of decisions. They feel that the country is being run for certain groups, the rich, they say, and also immigrant groups. And you have the same kind of phenomenon you had here in 2016 of people who feel that they have been ignored and treated badly, and this is their answer.
Yeah. Well, the taxes bill in France, I've learned a little bit here over the last week about their taxes. I mean, they're just horrific.
Yes.
The taxes on gasoline, I heard somebody say it takes 2 months' salaries just to pay for transportation costs. It's just ridiculous, the taxes that they're paying. And then, of course, in this case, what you have is a bureaucrat. That's who Macron is. I don't think he was ever
yes.
elected to anything before. He was a bureaucrat, probably a pretty smart fellow, but had never run anything, or had never run for anything, I should say. So he never had to go out and ask for votes. He got very lucky in 2017, because he was running against this lady who was pretty controversial herself, and he kind of came across as, you know, the reasonable
yes.
option. Yeah, Marine Le Pen. And
yes.
he kind of came across as the reasonable option.
Yes.
You know, and many French probably voted.
And now he's out of touch.
Yeah, but he probably was out of touch before too. It's just that now he's proving it. But the whole idea of raising taxes on people so that discourages them from using fossil fuels, and so that you can move to an economy that doesn't use fossil fuel. That sounds really good, Bill. I mean, you put that on a piece of paper in
yes.
front of a bunch of other bureaucrats. You put it there
sure.
on the table, and man, that sounds like the best explanation they've ever heard. But none
well,
of them
yes,
are paying gasoline. They're taking public transportation or being driven here and there, Bill.
That's right. And this is the kind of thing that a little Evita from the Bronx would even endorse.
Sure.
And you know, as long as she could get on television. But this demonstrates once again that global warming is a very, very controversial issue. People want to see clean energy, cleaner energy? Sure they do. But that's coming anyway. I mean, you know, as it gets developed, it isn't really developed yet. But I don't think a lot of people buy into this business that unless we start changing our economy immediately and going without and not using cars and all the rest, that unless we do that, the world is going to come to an end. And I think that hand was overplayed and very substantially overplayed.
Absolutely. And in France, 75% of the cost of gasoline is taxes, Bill.
Yes.
That's another thing I learned. So, I mean, it's like these people are saying, okay, how much more are you going to tax me? Also, I happen to be of the belief, yes, I would love to see clean air and a clean environment and all of that, too. I don't like pollution any more than anybody else. But I don't see any reasonable option to energy or fossil fuels in the near future. So it
That's
seems
right.
to me what you do is you try to make the fossil fuel or whatever you're doing now, try to make it cleaner, and then look for all kinds of economic incentives so that people out there begin experimenting and coming up with new ways of getting around, you know, or alternative energy, that is. I think we should look very seriously at what Brazil is doing, Bill. Brazil has been using corn and alcohol to run their cars. And they don't use a lot of gasoline. Or they don't use the same kind of gasoline that we do. So, you know, we could be learning more from them and see what they're doing, Bill.
I think that's true. And I think you're absolutely right when you say that the green energy or the replacement energy will be introduced as it is ready. I mean, people assume it's all there. They assume that, you know, they're locked in some Amazon warehouse are, you know, 20 million cars run on some substance we've never heard of, you know,
right.
and maybe book covers. You know, it's run on book covers, but
it isn't
ready, and the costs are going to be very, very high. Americans like the French feel that we are overtaxed, and that a great deal of the money we spend in taxes does not go to our benefit. And I think the kind of this demonstrations you've had in France can, I think, spread to other countries in Europe, and maybe even here to the United States.
Well, I was thinking you could see something like that happen in California, because that's a very heavily taxed state, you know, and they're doing all kinds of things to push climate change. But I have to believe that elected leaders in democracies around the world, after what we've seen in France, they're going to hit the brakes if somebody suggests to them that we need a tax increase to discourage people from using gasoline. I just don't think that's going to fly anymore, Bill.
I don't think it's going to fly either. And but you know, when you're dealing with the Democratic Party in the United States, you're dealing with egomaniacs, and especially
mm-hmm.
the billionaires like Tom Steyer,
yeah.
who are completely unattached to the real country. And to them, they'll just say, "Look, people just have to pay it. That we will tell them it's for their own good, and that we know this, and they should trust us because we're the good people."
Well, and that's probably this, what Macron is saying to himself. He doesn't understand how people can be so ungrateful. He's probably looking at these demonstrations and saying to himself, these people are so ungrateful. If they only knew how difficult a decision this was for me, and that I'm doing this for their own good, because I don't want the world to burn in 100 years or,
yes.
You know, whatever. You know, they really believe that they're smarter than anybody else, Bill.
Well, that's it. And anybody who criticizes them or even asks a question is immediately called anti-science. which is really, it's like going back to the age of Joe McCarthy, which is what we are in another McCarthy era right now. You're either anti-science or you're anti-woman or you're a misogynist or you're a racist or a sexist or this or that. It is very difficult to hold a civil conversation, but we better hold one because what's happening in France, first of all, can spread to other countries in Europe. There are other countries in Europe that are very much on the brink financially, Spain, Italy, Sweden is very unstable, and that can spread there and then can spread here. And they will already have a cadre of people who know how to organize these kinds of demonstrations. It is frightening. It could happen.
Well, what's interesting is here we are a year and a half later after President Trump pulled the United States from the Paris Climate Change Accords, and a new report came out indicating that none of the countries who are in the agreement are even keeping up with the agreement, that nobody's meeting whatever the goals are of the agreement. So, what you know, this was supposed to be an agreement to do what? Nobody's keeping up with it. Nobody's meeting the goals. There are no enforcement mechanisms in the agreement.
No.
So it's like, you know, it was just, I guess, an agreement of good intentions, Bill. We're so smart, we're just going to write this agreement, and everybody will just realize how smart we are, Bill.
I think it's, yes, I think it's the like putting a list of goals up on the on a third grader's wall in the third grade class and saying, this is what is expected of you and expected of your parents, so go home and tell them. And that's about that. It turned out, actually, that we have one of the best records in reducing emissions. The way the press talks, you'd think we were one of the sinners, but in fact, we have a pretty good record.
We do. We do. And we're doing all of that without the Paris Climate Change Accords. But we're doing it because the population wants clean air and clean water, and the population demands that of its government. I mean, look at California. I mean, I've heard people say to me that California in the 1960s, you would choke from all the pollution. It's not that way anymore because of the but it's not that way anymore. I mean, they've cleaned it up, and they did so because of government got involved. People were demanded their government to clean the air, Bill.
Yes. Well, you know, the fact is that's where the catalytic converter came from.
That's it.
I have to give the environmentalists credit on that. The trouble is they go too far. It's the old story of the left. They always push it too far. When they ask for things like better technology to get rid of air pollution, they got it because some of the requests were reasonable. And also, nobody wanted their children to breathe dirty air. But California today is a state that is very precarious. It used to be a Republican state, very solidly. People forget that Ronald Reagan was the governor of California. Today it is very solidly a Democratic state, and even counties and areas like Orange County that used to be Republican strongholds have now been flipped in some of their races to the Democratic side. The Democrats have absolute power in California, and they are the California Democratic Party, is one of the most radical of any Democratic parties in the country. It's very frightening because they have that huge delegation in Congress.
That's right, and that delegation is going to be they all think the same way. That's the problem. But of course, there may be a second chapter to that California story because of how they won some of those elections, Bill.
Oh,
yes. We were talking about it the other day, you know, the vote harvesting theory. And some Republicans are out there are complaining about this, and I think they ought to do a lawsuit against the state of California saying that, you know, that this is unconstitutional to do it this way. They ought to do a lawsuit and see where they get, Bill.
Well, this is a perfect example of press negligence. There are concerns among Republicans in California over what you just called vote harvesting, which is I think there seems to be a lot of evidence that it went on. But there is also concern in North Carolina about a congressional district where there apparently, or at least alleged, there was some hanky-panky by the Republicans. And the only one you see where there's any action being taken is North Carolina. only when the Republicans are under charge. But if the Democrats are under charge, the press shows no interest in it at all. And that is a liability that the Republican Party is going to have to learn to overcome.
Well, and in the case of, I mean, if you're an honest reporter, you would think that the California story could really be a big one for you to, I mean, you could uncover something pretty serious out there if you were willing to take the time to get into it, Bill. So I don't know. I mean, maybe there's a reporter out there who realizes, hey, I got a story here, and I'm going to pursue it. I hope so, Bill.
Well, I hope so. But the California press, I think, is even more monolithic than the national press generally. I mean, they used to have, conservative newspapers or at least more conservative than today. There were times when the Republican leader of the Senate in the late 1950s, William Nolan, was from California. This is not the state it was, and if truth be told, it isn't one state. It's a huge state which really has three areas, and in fact, as you know, there have been suggestions by some that the state be broken up into three states.
It wouldn't be a bad idea, especially after this last election, because if you're a Republican in California, particularly in the interior of the state,
yes.
I don't think you're going to get your phone calls returned by any of these leaders in Sacramento. Bill, let me talk about bring up three stories that are somewhat related here, and that is about the state of the media and political correctness and the Democrat Party as well. We were talking off the air about the Minnesota college professor who decided
yes.
to take on the Immaculate Conception, which
yes.
is, of course, a big story in the Catholic faith. And as I've always told everybody, I don't make fun of anybody else's religion, but I don't like people making fun of mine. And in this particular case, the professor brought in the Me Too movement, somehow suggesting that Mary, who was at the time a teenage, I think 17 or whatever, that she was made pregnant against her consent, that nobody asked her about getting pregnant. I think it's pretty sick, Bill. I don't know how people can think like that, but they do, Bill.
It's sick, especially since the individual making these comments has absolutely no background in that subject. We were talking earlier about a former Archbishop of New York who was asked about stories like this. Kids ask them all the time in Sunday school and religious institutions. And he gave what I thought was the best answer. He said, these are stories of faith. They're not stories to be taken to the bank. They're not stories that are necessarily scientifically approved. They're stories of faith. For somebody to make the coarse comments that this guy made, I mean, if you want to say, well, all right, I don't accept, the virgin birth, but I accept other aspects of teachings and moral teachings of the religion, well, there's a place for you. I mean, people have a perfect right to not be religious. But to go out of his way to insult Mary or any other biblical figure, it's just crazy. It shows the level of immaturity that exists
right.
in our universities today.
That's it. It's a level of immaturity because a sign of maturity is that you don't make fun of somebody else's religion. You don't make fun of it. You can say you can privately say, well, I don't believe in that, but you don't publicly make fun of it. But it's a total sign of immaturity. You're exactly right. The other point that I wanted to bring up was the Democrat national chairman, Mr. Tom Perez,
yes.
who basically
oh, yes.
said that the yeah, Perez, yeah, who said that the Democrats have to connect or somehow, or that, let me paraphrase what he said, that they're kind of losing a lot of voters because these voters are getting their political messages from the pulpit. And he brought up Roe v. Wade as an example, that the minister or the priest talking about politics, he simply says, well, Roe v. Wade is wrong. You need to vote against people who support Roe v. Wade. Where does he get this idea from, Bill? This is crazy. The people, the ministers don't talk about Roe v. Wade. They say that abortion is wrong. I've heard them many
yes.
times say it. And they
yes.
say that marriage is between a man and a woman.
Yes.
But they're not bringing politics into it. They're simply expressing the viewpoint of the religion, Bill.
That's exactly right, and that's exactly what they should be doing, and probably should be doing more of it. But Mr. Perez, who's a radical leftist and the chairman of the Democratic National Committee, is an individual who apparently has very little respect for the religious traditions of the country. We have always been a country that puts a great premium on freedom of religion. In fact, it was our first freedom. And the early pilgrims who came here, I guess you could still say pilgrim, I don't know. Maybe we should say white interloper. But the early pilgrims who...
White travelers.
Yes, white, who came here for religious freedom. You know, that's something we tend to forget. It is the first American freedom, and in many respects it is the most important because it deals with conscience. So I don't know what Perez is talking about. And once again, though, the tendency, I think almost an obsession nowadays, of the Democratic Party to insult people, people who used to be Democratic Party voters. The Catholic vote used to be part of the Democratic Party. It no longer is.
Mm-hmm. Well, how can it be when they're being insulted in this fashion? Now, over at the media, Chuck Todd, who's with NBC, I guess he's the host of Meet the Press. I don't usually watch that show anymore. I used to like it when the fellow who passed away used to do the show a few years ago, the man who suddenly died. You remember his name? The fellow back in about 5 or 6 years ago when he used to do the show. I don't remember his name right now, but I thought he was really good. So I used to watch it then.
Yes.
Well, I can't think of his name right
name,
now.
His name slipped me also.
Yeah, but he was very good. I thought he was great. I thought he was a good interviewer. Was always well prepared. Asked some good questions. I don't follow Chuck Todd.
Oh dear. Who?
I know. You know who I'm talking about.
I know. Yeah. And his son works at NBC also.
But I thought he was great.
Yeah,
I thought he was great. I thought he was a great interviewer
and a fair man, really.
And a fair man, yeah. I don't know about Chuck Todd, to be honest with you. I don't watch him, so I'm not going
sort
to
of a young,
pass judgment.
Smug guy. They had David Gregory in for a while, who now works for CNN. What was his name? He was the guy who held up the sign saying Florida in the 2000 election, saying this was going to be the decisive state, and he turned out to be right. Now, what is
that? Yeah, I know. His name escapes me right now, but you know who we're talking about.
Yes.
But Mr. Todd, apparently, he has a new explanation now for what happened in 2016. He says that the voters were gullible.
Yes.
As
opposed to other elections where they weren't gullible.
Right. So when they voted for Obama in 2012, they were not racist or gullible. But when they voted for Trump in 2016, now they're racist and gullible, Bill?
Well, that's the hypocrisy here, that many of the people who voted for Trump in 2016 had voted for Obama, especially in the big industrial states. Obama let them down. Trump seemed to have an interest in what they were doing. And as a result, Trump miraculously got elected. But the opponents of Trump are still so angry over that election. It's an obsession with them. They're trying to prove that some mystical act of evil occurred that night. It was just an election.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Tim Russert,
It's
the name of the man I was thinking of. Tim Russert, great interviewer. I thought he was fabulous. Thought he was one of the best in the media. Bill, looking at next week, everybody's back in town now, I guess, from all the holidays and. This is what they call that period in between Congresses, lame duck, I think that's what they call it. But what are you looking at this coming week, Bill? What are some of the stories you'll be following?
Well, I think without any question, the continuation of all the leaks and the statements made over the Mueller investigation, because the Democrats are getting ready to take over the House. I mean, they're going to be taking over the House in a month. And they are only talking investigation. They're going to find out that the American people are more interested in the economy, and other things. That, of course, will be, I think, continuing a very, very big story. I think also the situation in France, we talked about this off the air, and that is that Americans aren't taking this seriously enough. This is a big deal. France is a very important country, and it's one of the central countries of Europe. And that what's happening there can spread to other countries, and it is a threat to the European Union. Maybe that's what the doctor ordered. I don't know. But we should be spending much more time on that.
Absolutely. I think the American press it does not want to talk about this Paris story. And I don't want to create conspiracies, but I wonder if it's because the narrative is not there. I mean, what are they going to
say?
That's right. The politics of climate change doesn't work?
Well, yes, they would have to admit that there's something wrong with their own church, so to speak, the church of the changing climate. And you know, there is a lot wrong with it, and they just don't want to admit it. And also, foreign policy has become so uninteresting to the political left, unless they can nail President Trump on it. And I was going to say that the other major story that we were covering is, I think, one of the – obviously, this could change the entire course of American history, and that is whether or not Baby It's Cold Outside should be played on radio stations.
That's right.
This is something that, you know, I think that on this decision may rest the future of the Constitution.
Well, I thought you were going to tell – you had me set up there for a minute. I thought you were going to say Beto O'Rourke is running for president, Bill. I thought that's what you were going to say.
It's like saying the guy on the Cracker Jack box is running for president.
That's right.
I mean, the wanting of Beto, although nobody knows why. I mean, he could get elected. That's my great fear.
Oh, sure,
in a bad moment. And this guy has no idea what he – I mean, he's a real lightweight. He's a real lightweight. He doesn't even know what his first name is. I mean, we haven't had that in American history. My first name is Beto, I think. Or maybe it's Robert, I think. And as you said, I think on last week's program, I think his father-in-law is a billionaire. So there goes the old argument of the guy who was just an ordinary American working guy in jeans.
That's it, and I can't wait for him to say that Trump's policies are benefiting the top 1%, because if he runs for president, some Democrat will probably challenge him, his grandfather on that. I mean, his father-in-law on that. I can just imagine that's going to happen in Iowa or somewhere else, Bill. But we'll see what happens. But you're right, Baby It's Cold Outside.
That's
is one of the great dilemmas of all time.
I think that unless this is resolved, our whole moral stance as a nation is going to collapse.
I agree with you. I agree with you 100%. I like the Dean Martin version, by the way, of that song.
Yes, and also go online and see the original, which was Mr. Williams from the movie.
Oh, okay.
From Neptune's Daughter in 1949. I saw that movie. I saw the original when I was a kid.
Well, maybe next week we can talk about that movie, Bill, because I like to learn more about exactly what happened in that story. So I'll ask you about that one next week, Bill.
It is a fascinating story. Do ask me, because there's a lot there too that could be discussed.
Absolutely. As always, thank you for your time, and get ready for Christmas and start writing your letter to Santa Claus and get yourself ready, Bill.
Ho ho ho.
Okay.
And that's
good night,
the Democratic
and thank you
platform.
For your time as always.
Okay.
Talk next time.
Right. Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you so much. Our good friend, Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Well, there you have it. Next week, topic number one will be Baby, It's Cold Outside. I'm waiting very anxiously to hear that explained. It's actually a very good song. I like it a lot. Dean Martin has a great version of that song. That's the one I like. I'm not sure if that's the famous one, but that's a good version of that song. Well, thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later.